Welcome to Monaco's food and drink program, The Menu. I am Marcus Hippie. In the next 30 minutes, why it may make sense to hire ex-offenders for your hospitality business.
If you dedicate a bit of resource to teaching skills to people that are coming out of prison unskilled, they really can develop into, you know, fantastic employees.
More from Alex Head, owner of Social Pantry, catering company and cafe, in a moment. Also ahead, we meet Ravinder Bokal, whose Gigoni restaurant has become a steady favourite in London's Marylebone. She explains what it means to be proudly inauthentic.
Authenticity, in a way, is such a restrictive concept. And for me, I think the idea of authenticity is always going to be very subjective.
All that and a dinner soundtrack recommendation ahead on this week's edition of The Menu here on Monaco 24. Up first today, we hear from Alex Head, chef and entrepreneur behind Social Pantry, a London-based events and contract catering company with four sites in the capital. What makes her business rather special is that she works with UK prisons mentoring prisoners, and she also employs ex-offenders. So what's it like to work with prisoners who are right out of jail? And why is it that more businesses should do the same? I caught up with Alex to hear more, and first she told me how her entrepreneurial story with food began already when she was 15 and selling sandwiches in Riyadh, where her family had moved for work.
Gosh, so I was quite naughty when I was younger and I was expelled from school just for being really naughty. And so I got home for the kind of Easter holidays. My mum said, well, you better make some pocket money. So I thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to make some pocket money? And I printed out some clip art posters. I don't know if you're old enough to remember clip art, but I definitely am. And I went up to my dad's office and I put them on the wall and I sat by the phone. I waited for it to ring. So I sat by the phone and in came these sandwich orders and I delivered some really crap sandwiches, totally overpriced, to people stuck ultimately in the middle of the desert. We didn't have delivery back in the day. So my sandwiches really were the only option for my dad's office to enjoy. So I started selling them and managed to make a tiny bit of money. And that's kind of, I suppose, fueled my entrepreneurial spirit.
Exactly. In 2011, you launched the Social Pantry. Can you tell me about the process, how you got the idea to launch that business, and what was the gap in the market you saw?
Yeah. So I would love to say that it was really planned and I put loads of time and effort into a business plan. I definitely didn't. So I'd hit London when I was kind of early 20s and I was opening restaurants and I was running them for other people. And we opened a little pizza place behind Oxford Circus. And after 6 months, it closed. So it actually didn't work, which was one of the best business lessons I've ever kind of learnt. Really, it taught me so much. And luckily, it wasn't kind of with any of my investment or any of my money. So I was 25 and I was back to waitressing again. At the time, I already had a couple of catering clients that I was doing like the odd dinners for or lasagnas for their freezer or very simple kind of cooking for. And so I decided that I would give that a go and I would kind of go full time with my hobby at that time or my kind of pocket money stream, which was Social Pantry. So I was in my flat in Battersea. I think I probably had a couple of £100, which I spent on a website, and I made some really shoddy looking business cards and I handed them out and I just kind of waited for the orders to roll in. And the business grew from there, from the little Battersea flat. Word of mouth meant, you know, each event I got another event off the back of it. And so it started so organically in a tiny little flat in Battersea.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think you were so successful from the beginning? Did you do something right or were you lucky?
Oh, my goodness. I have done lots of things well and my goodness, if I got it wrong over the years. Like, it is definitely so challenging running a business. And I am the first to say that, God, I like to think I've made every mistake that someone can make. But I think if you're reactive to the mistakes that you're making, you know, if you make a mistake, if you learn from it, then you're going to survive as a business. And back in the day, I just made sure really that I served great food. So really tasty food, and I served it with a smile. And at the beginning, I was cooking, I was serving it, I was driving it, I was doing everything. And I made sure, really, that the product was great. And still now, 8 years on or 9 years on, I can't quite remember, I just make sure that the people at the events are fantastic and that the food, the product is really fantastic as well.
What is your food philosophy?
So fresh, seasonal and delicious is our tagline. And we have always, from the word go, kept it just really kind of simple, good food. It's locally sourced. It's delicious. Back in the day, it was myself cooking. So it was quite simple. It was just really, you know, tasty, good seasonal food. Now I've got a fantastic team of chefs who really are incredible. So, you know, we now are competing with those really big caterers. So the level of finesse has, you know, we're right up there as one of kind of London's go-to caterers. So the food now is really incredible. But if you were to visit one of my cafes, it's lovely, gorgeous salads. I mean, I was there yesterday with my dad and we had big focaccia sandwiches, gorgeous salads, loads of feta, which I bloody love. And we had some nice fresh juices and a good coffee. So it's simple, but it's seasonal and local suppliers.
I think it's really interesting how earlier you mentioned that you've made many, many mistakes and you've learned from them. Can you give me examples?
Many.
What have been the most educational mistakes you have made?
Yes. Oh, gosh. I mean, it's so challenging. I think one of the things that I really struggled with is managing a team. It can be really challenging. And I think, you know, nothing can really prepare you for that. I think if you were to go off and do all the university degrees under the sun, you know, you've got to practice. You know, practice makes perfect at managing and, you know, I suppose kind of leading a team. But ultimately, where we've grown a bit too quickly, that's something that I would look back on and think, OK, we've won a tender or we have said yes to something and actually, you know, we can pull it off and we've done well. But internally, we needed more structure or more people power internally. But each time you just, you know, you learn and adapt. But being reactive is what's so important, really.
Tell me about the ethos of your business. Social conscience is a very important aspect.
Yes, yes, exactly. So as I said at the beginning, I was really naughty. So having been expelled, I suppose I've got a lot of empathy for people that have messed up. And I kind of, for people coming out of prison, for me, I offer them employment. So for me, it's not about the crimes that they've committed. Once somebody is coming out of prison, they have done their time and they are coming out. And me as an employer, for about the last 5 years, I've employed ex-offenders on release from prison.
And what can you tell about that experience? If there are other companies considering doing something similar, what can you tell them?
Really, what I kind of preach is that if I can do it as a small company, the big companies definitely can do it. So when we first started doing it 5 years ago, my first ex-offender was Suhail. Oh, I loved Suhail. He really was fantastic. He was coming out of prison, I think on a drugs charge. And he started off doing a couple of days a week. And actually, that didn't really work for Suhail. So he was kind of a bit flaky. And I think I had 5 employees at the time. So I turned around to him and said to him, listen, Suhail, I've worked bloody hard to get here. If I offer you this position, you need to turn up. Because when you don't turn up, you're letting the kitchen down and you're letting us down and our events are going to go down if you don't turn up. So I'm going to give you a full-time role and you either commit and you get involved or you bugger off. And he committed and that was the best way to, you know, I had to be really firm with him and I had to kind of say, look, this is important. Don't, you know, come and go as you please. So I learned from the beginning that you've got to be quite firm. And Suhail only left in September last year after doing 4.5 years. And he came on as a kitchen porter and he left kind of managing with keys to a couple of my sites, I think. And at one point he had my house key and he had my bank card from where he had like had to go and do something for me. Like he was just so fantastic. So totally trustworthy and brilliant. But it just shows that if you allocate energy and enthusiasm and time and, you know, dedicate a bit of resource to teaching skills to people that are coming out of prison unskilled, they really can develop into, you know, fantastic employees. So it does take a lot of energy and passion. But if us as small companies can do it, we're really leading the way. Those big guys who've got big budgets, big HR structures in place that have got, you know, I suppose time and energy to allocate towards it, they really should be following suit. Because if we all make a little bit of difference, mm-hmm. then the whole problem is going to start being solved very quickly.
Do you have any other encouraging anecdotes or stories?
About the ex-offenders, I have so many. What did we have recently? Oh, one of the boys came up actually to me and we've now got a brilliant HR lady, Sylvia, who's fantastic. So she went off to Pentonville Prison actually the other day. So she is learning the ropes big time of kind of managing the ex-offenders. Anyway, and one of the boys popped in and he said, like, Alex, you robbed me. And I said, no, I haven't, Mari. I haven't robbed you. You're more likely to rob me. I haven't robbed you. Anyway, and I said, what is wrong? And he was just kind of really kind of confused. So we went out for a coffee and I said, listen, talk to me. You know, what's up? What's wrong? And he showed me his pay slip and I was like, oh, that's tax. Like, that is what you call tax, my friend. That has kept you in prison. That has kept you fed and watered in prison. And welcome to the real world. So now when an ex-offender joins the business, they have a mentor already. But Sylvia sits down and says, do you understand kind of what tax is? And this is what day you're paid on. So there's us assuming that we would know that everybody is taxed. And actually, you realise that some people don't. So we solved that. And the other question we now ask actually is with their starter forms is we ask the boys to fill in their starter forms because we've had in the past where I think it was my restaurant in Ealing. we had Garfield there and these checks were coming through, and it was only halfway through service that my head chef said, I don't think he can read the checks. And so we said to him, you know, Garfield, can you read? And he said, no, not really. And so we said, ah, okay. But it had taken us till kind of, you know, a few weeks down the line and middle of service to realise actually he couldn't. So there's lots of skills that you would assume people have, which we kind of take time and energy kind of teaching and getting them to kind of learn on the job.
Now, what kind of employers are you looking for? When you are interviewing someone, what do you want to see?
Somebody that's going to be dedicated, someone that's going to be really passionate. So ultimately, I learn on the job. So for me, it's not about having all the qualifications or having numerous degrees, or it's about being able to work hard, dedicate yourself to the job. Hospitality industry is incredibly challenging. Like, it is really hard work. So you do really need to be able to work hard and, yeah, I suppose, you know, be part of the team and embrace it. But learning, you know, being able to learn it is important.
Alex Hird there. She's the founder of Social Pantry. You are with The Menu on Monocle 24. Staying in London, Ciccone is one of our favourite restaurants, just a stone's throw away from Midori House. Ravinder Bogar founded Ciccone 4 years ago, and the rest is history, as its international flavours have found a loyal following across the capital. Now you can also get an idea of how Bogar has prepared many of the dishes, as she has recently released a cookbook. The release is called Ciccone, proudly inauthentic recipes from an immigrant kitchen. I caught up with Ravinder to talk about her journey, her cooking philosophy, and what the slogan proudly inauthentic recipes actually means.
I think that tagline, proudly inauthentic recipes from an immigrant kitchen, has really sort of spoken to people more than I was expecting even. And I think it refers to the fact that authenticity in a way is such a restrictive concept. And for me, I think the idea of authenticity is always going to be very subjective. So it is down to your experience and the landscapes that you have walked through. And that is what makes things authentic. And I think, especially in food, when people kind of talk about the idea of what is authentic, I just think that it's very restrictive. And the question when I cook that I ask myself is not so much what is going to make this authentic, but rather what's going to make it delicious.
Your restaurant, Ciccone, is obviously just a stone's throw away from Monaco's London HQ Midori House, and Ciccone is one of our favourite restaurants. For those of our listeners who are not very familiar with what you do, how would you describe your food, your cooking, your philosophy?
So I think our food is very much the food of immigrants. When we cook, we think about the people who have this ache and pining for what they've left behind, but yet the wonder of their new landscape. And I think that's what immigrant food is. It is the sort of preservation and the self-preservation of your old ideas, your old culture, old culinary traditions, interlaced with what you find in your new landscape. And I think immigrant recipes are forever open to adaptation according to the change in landscape. And I think that's what we try and capture at Ciccone.
So looking at these recipes you have in your brand new book, how many of them are recipes you got familiar with already as a child? You were born in Kenya and you moved to England when you were 7. How many of those are familiar for you already from your childhood?
Your identity is never not close to the recipes that you create. It's sort of woven into them like warp and weft. So I think there are things that are familiar from my childhood almost in all of them, because that is part of who I am. But certainly there are certain recipes like kukupaka, which is an East African Indian chicken curry that comes from the coastal area of Mombasa, which is very typically Kenyan. You know, you find it in all households. It's like a home food, a comfort food, but every household has its own way of doing things. And often the chicken curry is cooked on an outdoor stove, on a jiko, which is like, you know, a coal stove. And we couldn't do that here at the restaurant. So what we do is we smoke it afterwards to get that flavor of smokiness into the curry.
What kind of a process was it for you to decide which recipes to include in this book and which ones to leave out?
It was really difficult. You know, I think initially when I started talking to Bloomsbury, I, you know, very much had around 200 recipes in mind. And I think now there's probably just over 100, you know, to narrow it down. But it just, you know, the recipes that are in the book just felt like they fitted together very naturally. So that was the process, you know, what fits together naturally. And also in terms of what feels accessible to people as well.
What do you mean by fitting in together? Do you think there's some kind of a narrative in this book? Or what do you think the readers will get from the pages of this book?
Well, hopefully they'll get this sort of confidence of really wanting to cook without borders. That's what we do at Cicconi. We say, leave the borders to the politicians. A kitchen is a place for assimilating everybody's cultures and celebrating our diversity, celebrating the things that make us similar and celebrating things that also make us different. And hopefully that's what people will see in these recipes, that, you know, I've taken so much from the diverse immigrant cultures that I think make Britain great, and, you know, so much from their culinary traditions and so much from their flavors and spices and ingredients. And I think that's what I hope people find, the confidence to do that with these recipes.
How do you find those influences? Has it taken active research, or is it enough for you if you just go maybe to a new area of London and see what you can discover from there?
I think it's been a very natural process. You know, I think when you're growing up as an immigrant, as I was when I came to this country age 7, you are often surrounded by many other immigrant communities in the areas that you live and that you grow up. And you basically support all the little mini economies of immigrants around you. So you may find yourself shopping at a Korean supermarket or an Indian supermarket or a Turkish supermarket. And it's impossible then for those things not to interlace themselves with your own culinary heritage. So I think it's a very natural process.
Can you tell me about any recent discoveries you've made or things that have inspired you?
The recent thing that I have really loved using is dried limes. So they come from Iran, and it's a Persian tradition where they dry out the limes and they sort of rehydrate them in stews, that sort of thing. And I think that is really, really wonderful because you get this sort of bitter sharpness that you wouldn't get from just squeezing in a lemon or even using preserved lemons. It's a flavor in itself, and it's just a really wonderful way of adding this sort of interesting, softer citrus into your food.
Just finally, before I let you go, obviously, when I'm doing interviews about food or about restaurants with pretty much anyone, it's difficult to escape the topic of the pandemic we are still going through. How has that experience been for you? Have you learned any lessons?
Oh, absolutely. I think you learn lessons in business every day, whatever kind of business that you're running. But the pandemic, I think, obviously, it's been a really sorrowful and difficult time for everybody. But for us, you know, in a way, it made us stop. You know, it's surprising when you need to stop and when you have to stop, how quickly things can come to a standstill. And in that, you know, we've used that time to really, really focus on our values and our culture at Cicconi and really think about re-engineering the world around us, thinking about ways that we can be part of the solution rather than adding to the problem. And it's given us time to think about what it is we want to do. And one of the things that we, you know, I'd really always wanted to do was a vegetarian takeaway. You know, I'd always sort of had that at the back of my mind and never really had the time to put it into action. But of course, with the pandemic, we found ourselves with time. And so I worked on this idea and we launched our new sister brand called Comfort and Joy. We felt very strongly that it's exactly what people need right now. And the thing about this brand is, okay, it's vegetarian, it's delicious meal boxes, you know, that take inspiration from all those cultures that we cook at Cicconi. But they were values that we just didn't want to compromise on. One of those was I wanted to use containers that were 100% home compostable. So that took some research and finding, because even a lot of the recyclable, you know, packaging that you find is plastic lined and it has to go to a special plant to be recycled fully and sometimes doesn't make it there. But with this packaging that we've got, you can literally put it on your compost heap at home and it turns to soil in 90 days. And then we already were cooking with green energy, so that was great. We then really looked at our supply chain and shortening it right down so that we could work very closely with producers and farmers who really respect the environment, really care about the environment around them, and grow or create in a very sustainable and responsible way.
Ravinder Bogal of London's Chicony restaurant there. Her cookbook is out now and it's called Chicony, proudly inauthentic recipes from an immigrant kitchen. And that's all for this edition of The Menu. For previous episodes of this program, go to Monocle's website, SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. And remember to subscribe to the show so that it automatically arrives onto your device every week. Also, do check out our Menu spin-off show Food Neighbourhoods for great recipes. This show was edited and mixed by David Stevens, and I am Markus Hippi. Once again, we finish this program with a dinner soundtrack recommendation. Here is Gwen Stefani with What You Waiting For. Thanks for listening.